This is Susie Larson. I want to thank you today for downloading this podcast from Live the Promise. I do hope you enjoy it. Thanks also for your continued support of Faith Radio. I want you to know you can donate anytime by clicking on the Support Faith Radio tab. Have a great afternoon, and God bless you. Good afternoon. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson here with Tim Marks on the board, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Welcome to Live the Promise, and a very happy Friday to you. Well, before we get into today's show, we have Glenn Stanton on. We're going to talk about his book, The Ring Makes All the Difference. I'll set that up in a moment, but I just want to pause and say a big thank you. Tim, we had such a powerful share event. It was so encouraging to hear from listeners, to have them say, I believe in what you're doing. I want a part of this, and we are a big family, and it's just an honor to serve our friends, isn't it?
It is, and that's what's fun about doing these things a couple of times a year, is that we get a chance to connect with our listeners a little bit more, not only to have them participate with us, but also to hear their stories and to find out what's going on in their lives and how Faith Radio or something on Faith Radio has touched them.
Yeah, and so we just want to say a heartfelt thank you. Thank you for your prayers. Thank you for your support. Thank you for telling friends about us. This is something that just keeps hitting me. I think about the signal area that we reach in the upper Midwest. There are hundreds of thousands of people within our listening range who don't even know Jesus. So I want you to be a radio missionary. Think about it that way. Prayerfully support what we're doing, financially support if you can, if you haven't already, and then tell others about us. But if you already are doing that, thank you, and God bless you. And that's going to follow you all the way into eternity. So a while back, I visited out to Colorado Springs and got to go to Focus on the Family and do a couple of interviews while I was there. Got to talk to Glenn Stanton about his book, The Ring Makes All the Difference, The Hidden Consequences of Cohabitation and the Strong Benefits of Marriage. We had a powerful conversation and heard a lot from a lot of people after we aired that show, so we wanted to air it again. Here's my time with Glenn Stanton. And I'm going to give you a proper introduction in a minute, Glenn, but I have to tell you, just recently I've received an email from a woman who's heard me speak before and sincere follower of Christ, and she doesn't know what to do because her live-in boyfriend, she doesn't know where he's at in his faith. And, you know, that would seem obvious to know what to do. And the way she expressed her love for God was so sincere. But this shows you, to me, this is really testament of what's out there right now and the blurred lines among young people.
I hear it all the time.
I'm sure you do. So let me give you a proper introduction so we can get into the content of
this. There's no way to properly.
There really isn't, but I'm going to try. Glenn Stanton's a director of family formation studies at Focus on the Family here in Colorado Springs. He's a research fellow at the Institute of Marriage and Family in Ottawa. He debates and lectures extensively on the issues of gender, sexuality, marriage, and parenting at universities and churches around the country. He served the George W. Bush administration for many years as a consultant on increasing fatherhood involvement in the Head Start program. He's the author of five or six books. He's a contributor to 9. Glenn and his wife have 5 endlessly growing, amazing children, and they live in the Springs here. Glenn, thanks so much for taking time out of your schedule.
Thank you so much. It's
great.
Always a pleasure to be with you
in the
studio.
Really appreciate that. And as you know, we like to start out every show talking scripture. We love the Word of God and Live the Promise. And you chose Matthew 19:5. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. Talk to us about that passage.
You know what I love about that is because clearly what Christ is quoting is from Genesis, where we read God creates male and female. And then God says in Genesis chapter 2, for this reason, a man shall leave his mother and father and hold fast to his wife. And Jesus is talking to the religious leaders of the day, and they're trying to trick him with a marriage question. And what he does is he takes his inquisitors back to the beginning, back to creation, and he says, this is what marriage is. It is a burning of boats, if you will. It's the man leaving his mother and father. But what that really means is all of his meaningful relationships, and clinging to his wife, cleaving, holding fast to his wife. And that's what marriage is about. Cohabitation is not a leaving and cleaving. It's a keeping your options open. Marriage is about, you know what?
I'm all in.
Absolutely. No questions, no reservations. And what we're going to find out is that makes a real difference. What Jesus was talking about way back when, social scientists are finding today that, yes, that leaving and cleaving thing really does matter. And we find out time again that Jesus really knew what he was talking about.
He's right. Isn't that amazing?
He's quite smart.
He's so smart. Well, you know, people often look at cohabitation as a trial run for marriage.
Yeah.
But how can it be a trial run when you think about it, when you've got a wide open door of opportunity to leave? So any of your problem solving skills, any of your mindsets going into conflict,
mm-hmm.
to me, it seems like you would be forming these grooves in your brain that are altogether wrong. Wouldn't that be
You know
the
what?
Case?
That is exactly right. More than 75% of cohabitors cohabiting today are cohabiting with some intention of one day marrying. And many of them are using marriage as exactly what you said, a testing ground. But basically, we test out computers before we buy them. We test out a car before we buy it. We don't test out a beloved. I mean, that's just lunacy to say, you know what, honey, can
selfish,
I just...
right.
Well, it is. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what it is. It's like, I'm not quite sure about you. Can I just give you a little trial run? I mean, doesn't that just melt your heart, ladies?
Mm.
But that is exactly what the cohabitation proposition is I'm not quite sure about you. Let's see how it will work out. But they think, well, wouldn't it be good for us to enter into that kind of relationship and find if we're really compatible? The problem is, when you enter that relationship without the commitment, it tends to poison, to dilute the relationship itself. That's why cohabiting relationships break up at phenomenal rates.
Well, if you just tuned in today, I'm talking to Glenn Stanton. He's written an amazing book, The Ring Makes All the Difference, The Hidden Consequences of Cohabitation and the Strong Benefits of Marriage. You know, this is for the person who's living with her boyfriend. Mm. This is for the pastor who needs to understand that he's got people in his congregation,
yeah.
most likely, right? Living,
absolutely.
Living together.
And that's really what I wrote the book for, was for pastors and counselors who are dealing with this. And essentially, I mean, it's a relatively thin book, but they can get kind of a graduate level education on what the social sciences say about the harms of cohabitation. So the pastors just don't have to say, well, because it's wrong. They can explain why it's wrong and what the research says, and that it will really educate and bolster up the counselor, the pastor's recommendation to the couple that cohabitation is not such a good idea.
Well, we want to open up for questions, if you will. So give us a call if you've got a question for our guest today, 877-933-2484. We're going to have a funky way of how we're going to get these questions in. But go ahead and try it, 877-933-2484. If you're more comfortable, you can email me, Susie@faithradionet.com. So talk to me about your initial inspiration of writing this book. Obviously, you saw a need and God put it on your heart, and it was something that needed to be addressed. But I'd love to know the internal process.
Yeah, I had been researching this issue in my job here at Focus on the Family, looking at piles and piles of research. I mean, literally have read hundreds of studies. And I don't just read the abstracts, the little, you know, explanations up at the top of the study. I read the whole study, looking at what the data says. And so over these years doing this, I thought, you know what? Somebody needs to put this into a book in a way that thoughtful people, but people who don't have a sociological background, things like that, can get an understanding as to why cohabitation is not a good idea. Here's the thing. In those hundreds of studies that I've looked at, I have not found any social scientist or psychologist who has ever pointed out one positive thing. I mean, that's a radical statement. And in the social sciences, it's hard to say, you know, always or never.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have not found any positive thing that the scientists have said cohabitation increases or benefits. Largely all the outcomes are negative, and people need to know that. I mean, for instance, so many couples are cohabiting today thinking that it's going to lead to stronger, healthier, happier marriages. But what the research is finding is there are few things that couples do of their own free will to increase their likelihood of divorce than cohabiting
wow.
together.
That
you know,
amazing.
I mean, that is remarkable. And people need to know that cohabiting before marriage puts you in a greater area of risk of divorce like few other things do. In fact, the scholars are telling us that for cohabitors, their risk of divorce is 50 to 80 times greater than the same couple from the socioeconomic status and all who did not cohabit together.
So you really are making a case in this book. And really, a person without any faith at all
oh,
would
absolutely.
Read this book and be convinced.
Absolutely.
And that's what I like. scientific.
Well, in fact, what's curious is in the book I explain, me as a Christian, why am I not relying on Scripture? Well, because I say we get to read out of another book, the book of nature. And that's what I'm presenting for the Christian and the non-Christian is, okay, we know that our grandmothers are against it. We know that our pastors are against it. Not many of us know the Scriptures are against it, but it is. But science itself is against it because they've had a wonderful opportunity to study millions of cohabitors and see really what the outcome is.
Well, you know, I thought of as you were talking is, isn't it just like God when he gives us moral guidelines and you were to, if you could back it up scientifically,
yep.
Anything he says don't do, it's because it really is bad for us.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. And I love to say that. It's not like God once upon a time had to put a list of things in the don't column and a list of things in the do column.
He's a killjoy.
Well, right. And he just started throwing darts, picking. It was what is good for the people that I have created. Mm. And when I tell you not to do certain things, it's for your own good.
He's
I mean,
a good
we can often act like children, right? Well, you just don't want me to have any fun, we say to our parents. No, they're watching out for us, and God is that kind of father.
Oh, he so is. Okay, so as I said, I welcome your calls, 877-933-2484. And Gracie, our producer, said, some might say, why do we need a piece of paper to show we're committed? We're married in our hearts. What's a good answer for that? I've actually heard that argument before. Why do we need a piece of paper? We're married in our hearts. And I love to hear what you have to say.
Oh, you know what? And that is a great question. And you know, you'd want to ask the researchers this. So what is the difference between cohabiting relationships and married relationships? Well, first of all, the level of commitment. The level of commitment and dedication to the other partner is much higher and works out better in married relationships. Interesting, cohabiting couples. You could have two couples, all the same, equal in many ways, but the cohabiting couple is more likely to not have as much money to save and invest and use. They are more likely to use their money more selfishly amongst themselves. That's your money. This is my money. Married couples tend to put their money more together. Married husbands help out around the house with household chores 8 hours a week more than a cohabiting man does. Domestic violence is dramatically higher in cohabiting relationships than it is in married relationships. Really quite low in married relationships. And people say, well, it's low in married relationships because the women can't, you know, confess or they can't admit that they're being abused. The researchers are smarter than this. You know, they know how to tease these kinds of things out. Regardless of how they measure it, domestic violence, sexual abuse, physical abuse, verbal abuse is much higher in cohabiting relationships.
Well, when you think marriage makes us more like Christ, and much of that process is dying to ourselves, loving,
absolutely,
reaching out to the other, we've got a big reason as a husband to help your wife around the house. If you're building something that's going to last, you have no reason really to do that if you're flesh doesn't want to.
Well, and here's the other thing. Marriage empowers the woman. I like to say this, and it's absolutely true. Marriage, historically, socially, is the relationship on the woman's terms. Cohabitation is more the relationship on the man's terms. And that is because when you have a relationship where commitment is high and commitment is clarified, everybody knows where the relationship stands, that tends to serve the interests and benefits and safety, really, of the woman herself. That's very important for us to know.
Boy, that's good. Well, here's a stat that I had read that was amazing to me from your book, that children living with unmarried cohabitating parents are 3 times more likely to live in poverty.
Absolutely. And what's remarkable about that, if you compare kids living with 2 married parents and those living with 2 cohabiting parents, everything else being equal, the children living with the 2 cohabiting parents are 3 times, like you said, more likely to live in poverty. But here's the thing. There are 2 parents more likely to be working in the cohabiting home, yet they're still more likely to be living in poverty. That is because the relationship between cohabiting and marriage tends to elevate well-being and income and things like that.
You know, this is also interesting to me, is that from what I read and gathered from your book, that a person is better off as a single parent than cohabitating. And I could see where a single mom would think, I need a man around the house. But it's to the children's detriment, isn't it?
You know what? The child abuse situation most prevalent is mother living with her live-in boyfriend. putting the children at incredible risk, also with poverty as well. What they're finding is cohabitation is more a subset of singleness than it is of being married. I mean, the sociologists are very clear on this, that living in a cohabiting situation is more like being a single individual than it is like living in a married situation.
And yet even worse, because of all the mixed messages, the risk you're putting children in.
Well, and that's exactly right. And the other thing that happens with cohabiting relationships is the feminists used to tell us, well, women should go into cohabiting relationships because if it turns bad, they can leave those relationships. But what scholars are finding out, it's this thing called the relational vortex, that your money's together, you're emotionally tied together. And if a woman is in a bad relationship, there is no divorce law. There is no structure to help that woman leave the relationship. We don't think of divorce as a good thing, but what divorce does is it provides a structure and safety for the individual who wants to leave the relationship. Cohabiting couples don't have that. So we find instead more women in bad relationships unable to leave those relationships than you get in marriage because of that relational vortex. And it really traps women. It traps women more than men into these cohabiting relationships.
Okay, so I'm thinking of two couples. One couple, they live together, then they get married. So they end up getting married. And the other couple who doesn't live together, then they get married. Would the couple that cohabitated, it seems that they would have a harder time because wouldn't there be things they have to unlearn? Because there really are apples and oranges, aren't they?
Absolutely. See, they have learned to negotiate. The relationship is all about negotiation. I mean, even to the point of, you know, do you put the cap back on the toothpaste and things like that? The cohabiting couple, because of the lack of security and definition to the relationship, they have to negotiate in a more manipulative sort of way to sort of get what they want. You don't find that in married relationships. And so the cohabiting couple is learning to argue in a different way, to fight in a different way, to defend themselves in a different way, to try to get the other person to do what they need to do in a different, less healthy sort of way. And again, this is a social scientist finding this out time and time again. So the process of cohabiting gets us to live in relationships in a much less healthy way.
And ways that we actually have to unlearn. Well, let's make it spiritual for a minute, because when you're living outside the will of God, there's a real problem there. But when you come together before God and you ask His blessing and you make a vow before God, you also have the help, the supernatural help of the Most High on your side. Talk about just the benefit on the side of marriage. When you come together before God, even in the worst of times, you're not without help.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And we need to understand, you know, marriage is not a cakewalk all the time. I mean, marriage is very, very difficult. Ask any couple that has been married 50 years or more about their hard times. They will tell you stories, but ask them if they would rather have it any other way, and they'll say absolutely not. So marriage builds the relationship on a more healthy, stable foundation, primarily because it clarifies the relationship for everybody. They ask cohabiting couples, men and women, where their relationship was going. One group was more likely to say, oh, well, we're definitely getting married someday and we really do love each other. Another group was more likely to say, you know what, we're having just fun, hanging out, seeing where it happens. Do you think it was the men or the women that said that later thing that we're just hanging out, having
fun? Men.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, and so what we find out is that women are cohabiting under false pretenses, thinking that their relationship and cohabitation is going to help them get to marriage when the guys are just hanging out and having fun. Women need to know that. Moving in with your guy is not the mechanism to get him to the marriage.
It really is the old cliche, you're giving him his cake and he's eating
it too. Absolutely.
You
know? I mean, that's exactly right.
Giving away all the power. I'd love for you to expound a little bit more on the man's mindset and the woman's mindset in that scenario, because they are worlds apart pretty much, aren't they?
Yeah, it's interesting. As I talk with young people, they tend to have a hard time understanding that there really are real differences between men and women other than just the plumbing. But there are real differences. In the sexual relationship, women tend to connect more. And so every time that they're connecting with their guy before marriage sexually, they are building hope in the future. They are building connection. The guy, it's not that he doesn't have any of that, but it's not near like the woman. And so she is investing in this relationship. She is making deposits in the bank, if you will, relationally, but the guy is not doing the same thing. I have four daughters, mm-hmm. and I think about, you know, if they were to be used by a guy that way, I mean, it's just horrible for the young woman. And again, that is what the cohabitation relationship is all about, is just the guy getting exactly what he wants, which is really this, companionship, but regular sex and regular food and a housekeeper. You know, you give a guy those basic things, he's just going to be happy. Whereas the woman is looking for more. She's looking for a more real, committed, foundational kind of relationship.
And you know what? It is not good for human nature to get everything you want when you want. And there's something I loved in your book about the whole idea of social control that happens in the context of marriage.
Exactly.
That can be interpreted as nagging, but it's like, you know, where a wife is encouraging her husband, wear your earmuffs, you know, and do you need the whole pizza, really? But really, the man not really being in a position as a live-in to be, you know, shaped that way.
You know what? You're exactly right. I mean, this phrase, okay, a woman starts doing what a woman does in that relationship, and the guy responds, hey, you're not my wife, mm-hmm. and you're definitely not my mama, you know? She really is an odd kind of person in that relationship. But I love to go back to the example of couples married 50 years or more. Go to couples married 50 years or more and ask them, you know, sir, did your wife make you into a better person? And they will laugh at you. They'll laugh at you not because it's a ridiculous question, but because it's an obvious question. The woman has significant social control. And it's what we call nagging, you know, do this, don't do that.
If it's sanctified nagging, it's a good thing.
Well, it is. But we do need to understand that that is really what makes men better.
Yeah, and you think about a man getting everything he wants, but not feeling the need to respond to some of the dying to yourself. And we as women need to die to ourselves as in the context of marriage, where maybe we're not nagging, we're praying more and lovingly encouraging. But you learn all of that through commitment. And if it's not there, it seems like the man's going to morph. I'm trying to imagine what happens to a man who maybe goes from one cohabitation to another. You know, he morphs into something that's not...
Well, he's learning that it's all about him.
Right.
You know, and the only way you're going to fit into my life is if you can be everything that I want you to be, which is no way to live for the other party. And that's where marriage comes in, and it's the marriage vows. Go back and look at the marriage vows. I vow to love you, to care for you, to protect you, not in just all the great times, but even in the bad times. And the other thing about that is weddings are held in public. They're recorded down at the courthouse because we want a record that this guy committed to this gal and this gal committed to this guy, so that later on when we want to get out of it, our in-laws said, dude, I heard what you said. Our friends ought to do that to us. And like, you know what? I was at your wedding. I cried at your wedding. I am not going to let you get out of this kind of commitment. That doesn't exist with cohabitation.
You know, and that's your next book, Glenn, in your free time, of course. But really, though, being the iron sharpens iron in the context of marriage, because as a women's conference speaker, I cannot tell you how often I hear women say, where are the men? Everybody at church knows my husband's fallen down over here. And the men know it, but nobody's rising up. But I'm not just saying this against men, women. We need to do this for each other, too, calling each other up. You know, I hear you talk about your husband again and again and again to the point of dishonor. To have the courage, really, to sharpen each other. Because as a community, then, you're supporting marriage. Isn't that a brilliant idea for a book?
That is a good idea. I think it's a very, very important idea, because a bit of it is the magic of what marriage does, that women really do shape men, and they have been doing that forever. I think about that great little novel, Lord of the Flies, where these young boys get shipwrecked on this island, and they just turn into horrible beings. If there had been one little girl on that island with them, it would have changed the whole dynamics, because the first tough guys would have, you know, tried to macho up to her and impress her. She would have just rebuffed them, but it would have been the regular guys who were courteous, kind, thoughtful, that would have gotten her attention. The other guys would say, okay, that's how you get the girl. it would have changed all of their behavior. Women need to understand the power that they have, but they don't exhibit that power in hookup relationships, and they can't exhibit that power in cohabiting relationships. It can only really be done in marital relationships.
So they really get the short end of the deal in every way, shape, or form when it comes to live-in, don't they?
Absolutely. And Chapter 7 of the book talks about that. It's really the first time that that has really been addressed, is how cohabitation really does cheat women more than it cheats men. It hurts both of them, but women are the biggest losers in the cohabitational exchange, and that needs to be understood.
It absolutely does. Well, I'm talking to Glenn Stanton today. He's written a great book, The Ring Makes All the Difference, The Hidden Consequences of Cohabitation and the Strong Benefits of Marriage. I wish really that every pastor would get their hands on this book, because I believe this is an incredibly prevalent problem. And I was just thinking as we were talking, Glenn, that really a community is strengthened when marriages are strengthened, mm-hmm. and we need to be addressing these things. But I love what you said about, you know, dude, I heard you. I was at your wedding.
Yep.
Such important conversations.
And have that accountability. I would say, I mean, I agree with you, not just to sell books, but that every pastor should have this book. And I would encourage people, go out and get this book, purchase it, and give it to your pastor
there
and
you
say,
go.
You know what? You do marriage counseling with couples that are cohabiting. You're not quite sure what to say. This is a book that can help you guide them in intelligent and loving sorts of ways.
And, you know, one of the things that academic unbelievers don't like is when we just say, you know, because I said so, or because it's wrong. And so to have scientific information, I mean, God says, and that can and should be enough. But for those who need more,
Absolutely. It's
in this book, definitely.
Yep.
Well, on the other side of the break, I want to talk about, we're going to kind of go back to your old book just for a second to talk about how do you raise daughters who don't give it all away? And how do you raise sons who aren't these slouches who want to move in with girls? I want to talk about that because it starts when they're kids, you know? And then we'll venture in. I've got a whole list of other questions. Well, I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Got Glenn Stanton in studio as my guest. We're talking about his great book, The Ring Makes All the Difference. More with Glenn Stanton in just a moment. So glad you tuned in today. I'm Susie Larson, broadcasting from the studios of Focus on the Family. And we've got in studio Glenn Stanton. He's written a great book, The Ring Makes All the Difference, The Hidden Consequences of Cohabitation and the Strong Benefits of Marriage. If you've just tuned in, I really want you to hear the whole show. And just shortly after the show ends today, we'll have a podcast up. I ask you to go listen to the whole show and share it with a friend. This is so, so important. Glenn, you and I were talking during the break and how this really belief, this mindset of you can be a godly person and live with your boyfriend or girlfriend, what happened that the lines have gotten so blurred and people think nothing of it?
Well, I think, first of all, we've failed to understand what marriage is about. We think that it's just a sentimental kind of thing. If you want to do that, that's great, but you don't really need it. Marriage is a sacred institution, but it's also a humanly universal institution. There is no society anywhere that has existed and maintained itself without marriage. That is because marriage makes a huge difference in our lives. And so young couples need to understand that marriage is a way to start a relationship where both are equal. It's not saying, you know what, I don't want to give part of myself to you. Marriage is the giving of your total self to each other and vice versa. And that's very, very important.
And, you know, we don't see it just in marriage with young people. We see it in movies. We see it in what they post on Facebook. I mean, you know, that the cultural influence is so strong that the lines have become blurred. And some real obvious areas that we would consider moral areas, they're blurred. But we need to be continuing to speak up.
Well, it's interesting. There's something deep in the young adult's heart to be kind of countercultural and radical. And it's not radical to say marriage doesn't matter. That's the way the stream is moving. The radical thing, the countercultural thing, is to say, I am not going to give myself to somebody so easily, and I'm not going to allow you to give yourself to me so easily. I want there to be a commitment. I want to deny myself and do the really hard and difficult thing and build our relationship on the right grounds.
And isn't there something that's really beautiful when you have enough self-respect? It makes you actually more attractive. You know,
Absolutely.
When you honor yourself enough to say, as much as this seems convenient, you don't get to have it. We're not going this
way. It's the old idea in the old days, okay? The girl in the 40s and 50s who, you know what? She could not be gotten. Do you think guys were turned off by her? No, they were after her all the more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there's something about the, you know, the prize at the top of the hill, if you will. And women need to understand that. That there's this wonderful thing about saying, you know what, I'm worth quite a bit, and you're going to have to pay a good bit to get me. But unfortunately, there are too many women who have just absolutely lowered that price. It's interesting. I have a good sociologist friend. He teaches at the University of Texas at Austin. One of his students came to him, and she was a little dismayed by the hookup culture, and she thought it would be satisfying and everything. He said, do this. Just kind of be cool to the guys that are coming up to you and keep telling them no and see what kind of reaction you get. She came back about a month later. He said, so how's it going? She goes, you know, I think I'm going to keep doing this for a while. She realized that by making herself exclusive, it actually helped her standing. She didn't miss the sex in any way whatsoever, but she did love the respect that she was getting from these guys.
Wow. You know, that's something my dad raised all four of us girls to just demand respect, and that, you know, that we have a choice in the matter to have a boundary about that. And, and I remember last time I had you on the show, I loved it. You talked about if your daughter was dating a guy who got in the car and didn't get out and open up the door, that you trained her to turn around and go the other way. Say more about that as a father of daughters.
Exactly. And I have told my daughters this, and this comes out of my real heart for them, is like, you do not understand how special you are. And if a guy comes to take you out, you're walking out to the car, you stand by that door. If he goes around to his side, looks at you, you just keep standing there. You keep standing there until he comes to open that door for you. Because you are saying, I am going to be treated a particular way. If he just gets in his car and sits down, you turn around and walk yourself right back in. Because that's a guy who is saying, I am not going to treat you the way you expect to be treated. And you know what? If gals would do that, they will find out that that word will spread, and it won't make your credit go down around school. It will boost your credit like crazy, like, wow, that chick is something else.
Yeah, someone once said, we teach others how to treat us, and don't
we? Exactly.
We really do that.
That's exactly
Well,
right.
Let's talk for a minute about prolonged adolescence. You see this among boys. We raised all boys. Our boys are in their 20s. But this has really hurt, I think, the whole idea. I think it's had an impact on marriage, and I think it's greatly impacted the idea of cohabitation. Because if they're allowed to just sort of be slouches in their basement and play video games into their 20s, and, you know, and the mom just sort of caught them and does their laundry and make all their food. It's a natural segue to go live with someone and have someone else do that for you, isn't it?
Well, and what's interesting is the girls are allowing it. Exactly what you said, this lack of good men. You ask a stadium full of 1,000 young women what they're doing with all the great options of men that they have out there, they will laugh at you. They're not there. And so what they'll do is they will live with the guy, and they'll have his babies. Two of the greatest family growth trends today are cohabitation among 20-something women, 30-something women, and out-of-wedlock childbearing among 20-something women and 30-something women. Out-of-wedlock childbearing among teens is going down. It's among these adult women who cannot find guys to marry. The women want to marry, but if they can't find a guy to marry, they will live with them. They'll take what they can get, or they'll have his babies out of wedlock because they want what they want. They want their babies. Their biological clocks are ticking faster than their wedding bells are ringing.
That's kind of amazing. You think teens get pregnant, you know, by accident for the most part. 30-somethings are intentionally settling for a guy who's not good enough to marry, but I've got to have a baby. This is so mixed up, isn't it?
And it is. It is. Epidemic. Absolutely epidemic. And it's amazing to watch. And I've talked to a number of these women and I say, well, are you against marriage? Oh, no, we're not against marriage. If you could find me a great guy to marry tomorrow, I'd be married by the morning. I mean, they're all over that. But it's that we're not manufacturing men. That's a very, very important point. And I talk about that in my earlier book, Secure Daughters, Confident Sons, that sociologically and anthropologically, the scholars tell us that if you just leave women to themselves, they will move into mature womanhood, not to a person, but for the most part, better than guys will. Guys left to themselves do not naturally go into good manhood. They have to be cultured in that way. They have to be cultivated in that way. Margaret Mead made this wonderful statement. She said, "It's true that women create humanity, but only men can create other men."
Wow.
That manhood is created really by the fathers. You look at gang activity. Gang activity is a young man going out there and saying, "You will respect me. You will respect my power." And they do it with violence. They do it with sexual aggression. And guys in gangs are not guys that were well-fathered. Fathers help young boys understand, you know what, you've got what it takes. I like your power. I like your skill. And so they don't have to go out and prove to the world how tough they are because they've had that affirmed by the important men in their lives.
Well, I would love to have you speak both to the parents of daughters, little girls, mm-hmm. and parents of sons, and give some advice on what they can do right now to raise up girls that have that confidence that won't give it all away, and boys that will have even their own self-respect and not give it away, so to speak.
You know what? It's interesting that you say that, Susie, because I think about my own kids, and I would be crushed if they were to move in with somebody. But the crushing wouldn't so much be the sexual nature of it or the moral nature of it. It would be there, but it would be like, I didn't raise you to have that little self-confidence. And understand that very clearly, because a girl who moves in with a guy, she's marking down her commodity, basically, of who she is. A girl who's not going to settle says, you know what? Here are my terms. You're going to commit everything to me. There's going to be a wedding on this particular day. You're going to show up. You're going to wear a dorky tux. You're going to dance at the reception. You've got to do all these things in order to get me. That is a powerful woman. It's not a powerful woman that says, sure, where do you live? I'll bring my toothbrush and my underwear over and I'll move in, you know? And for me and my daughters, I just think, girl, you mean the world to me. And you need to value yourself that way. And I think that's being reflected in their lives. And I think that's very good as well. Boys, the same. It's different for boys in that they need to have the gift of learning how to honor women. And it starts really with their mom.
Yeah.
You know, a dad who lets his son sass his mother is a man teaching his boy that it really doesn't matter. You know, I think it's a really wonderful thing. I don't advocate violence, but you know what? A boy who sasses his mom, for dad to snatch that kid by the back of his coat, throw him out the house and say, you know what, kids who yell at my wife don't live in this house. You know, this kind of wake-up call for the son. So, whoa, okay, that doesn't happen. Boys need to learn that. Boys need to understand that. And that boys who would ask a girl to move in without marriage is a boy who is not respecting that girl, nor in a different sort of way, but a similar sort of way, is not respecting their own mother. Because of what femininity is, because what it means to be a woman. And so boys need to learn to respect women, and marriage helps them do that.
Wow. And I'm remembering a time I had some things happen to me at the hands of teenage boys. I think I told you that when I was a young girl, boys in our neighborhood, that forever changed my identity, and it took a long time to heal from. But raising three boys initially, I really thought God had made a mistake, that I had so much to teach girls.
But
he really showed me that I needed to build some honor as a mom on how to treat women. And my husband's just brilliant with his respect for me and what he modeled there. But I remember we had a youth group over, and one of the girls was splashing my son. And so he starts splashing her back, and she's like, no, no. And he kept splashing, and another boy jumped in. And it was kind of the no, yes, love it so much,
exactly.
But stop it, you know. But I heard the no, no, and they kept splashing, and it kind of grabbed me. And I ran out there, and I said, honey, she said no. And we'd talked about this before, and he stopped, you know. And then later on, I went down and sat on his bed, and I said, you know why, right? I mean, as much as he could handle maturity-wise, he'd known something had happened to me. And I said, no means no. Even if she's joking around, no means no means no. He goes, I have to call her. So he went and called her, and he said, and he said, I want to tell you, I'm really sorry for continuing to splash you when you said no. And I watched his whole countenance drop. And he said, well, I just wanted to say that. And then he got off the phone. I said, what's the matter? He said, she laughed me off and said, no guy's ever listened to me. And she just kind of mockingly laughed at him.
Yeah.
And I said, what kind of boy do you want to be? One that reinforces her belief system, or one who changes the tie?
Exactly.
And
he could think that he's a loser for having done that.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know what? She can laugh you off, but son, you were a man.
That's right.
In doing that. And it doesn't matter how she responded. And I would have to bet that she thought about that later.
I'm sure.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And that perhaps maybe in her 20s she'll think, you know what, that was incredibly respectful and not easy for him to make that call. One of the things that I say is that young boys should never, ever, ever, ever apologize for being gentlemen. And your son was being a gentleman.
Mm.
And, you know, you should never back away from that whatsoever. But it's great that you helped him learn, you know, the balance between does no always mean no and does yes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's a difficult thing because with his guy buddies, you know what, the more the merrier. The wetter you get, the more tough it gets, the funner they are. And young boys need to understand, okay, girls are a little different. They don't really like it that way.
And sometimes girls are just trying to be a good sport. So she might be laughing like it's fun, but hating it on the inside. No
yeah.
means no means no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's it, where the guy needs to learn to respect the girl, that she is different. And that she needs that respect. She needs that care. She needs that tenderness. It's interesting, when I was researching the book, Secure Daughters, Confident Sons, I asked every woman that I talked to and interviewed, I said, respond to this question. A girl ultimately wants a male to take care of her. And with my Christian friends or Christian, you know, interviewees, I didn't expect much pushback. But when I talked to, you know, like hardcore New York journalists, and I expected, I kind of put the phone far from my ear thinking they may yell at me. What I was surprised with was that all of the women that I talked to said, absolutely.
Mm.
And it's not because they were weak or because they couldn't take care of themselves. Clearly, many of these women were just rocking it in the world, doing everything they wanted to do. But a woman's heart is to have somebody to take care of them, to protect them. And again, not because they need it, but because they want it.
Which brings me back to the whole idea of fathers engaging their sons, because you can train up your son to even not only not sass the mom, but care for her in a way where you hold the door. When you see elderly people hold the door, you train them so that, you know, they're not going to learn that instinctively all of a sudden, but they start to be trained to be.
And that's where family life comes about, is that commitment between everybody for the dad to model for his kids, okay, here's how you treat a woman. And not the dad does it perfectly all the time, but when he messes up, you know what, to go to mom and ask forgiveness. And sometimes to even do that in front of the kids. You know what, I was sharp to your mother earlier today. You guys were here. I want to apologize to her, but I want you guys to hear that too, because I offended her in front of you guys.
Mm, and that's family life, isn't it?
And it is family life. And the kids are learning in that way that there's a strength to that humility.
You know, I remember when our sons each got their license, Kev said to them, from now on, now that you're in the house and you have your license, mom will not have to put gas in her car. And so you'll be the guys doing that for her. And that's just training them to care for, you know, in an appropriate way to care.
And to think about, okay, I'm driving the car now. Mm-hmm. I don't know when mom's going to need it, but you know what? I don't want her to have to put gas in the car. That's a wonderful kind of example.
Just simple, simple things like
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Well, go ahead.
And their wives are going to appreciate that.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Because they have been trained and taught how to do that.
And there is so many other things now that they're 20-something. I think, oh, I could have and should have done this. But one thing I taught them, Glenn, how to separate their darks from their lights. I'm like, your wives are going to love me for this. Whites go here and darks when you wash clothes. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Absolutely.
I didn't mean to insult you there.
No.
All right. So in the book.
What's washing clothes? I don't know.
Anyway, in the book, you gave a kind of two scenarios of women. One who had the grit to give some kind of ultimatum and the other who had repeated conversations that went nowhere. With these men in their lives. Would you kind of paint those two pictures for us?
Sure, absolutely. And what I love about this is this came out of a book. This is a secular book written by a woman from New York, and it was kind of a field manual to ladies on how to work your way through relationships, cohabiting relationships, because she admitted that there are different kind of relationships. But in the end of the book, she talked about women do better when they set what she called the feminine ultimatum, which is, and she told the story about this one young woman who her boyfriend invited her to move in with her. And she said, I'll move in with you under one condition. I need a ring on my finger and a wedding. It wasn't just the engagement. It was the wedding. Well, she did that She got what she wanted, and they have a great relationship. She contrasted that with other women that she's seen. And again, this is a secular, non-moralistic kind of writer talking about this, about women who went from relationship to relationship to relationship, cohabiting, settling for the relationship on the guy's terms. Who was the happier individual? This other woman going from relationship to relationship, brokenhearted, brokenhearted, brokenhearted. This woman, she knew what she wanted. She knew she wanted to found her relationship on marriage. She got what she wanted, and she is much happier today. And who is the stronger woman?
You know, obviously.
We tend to think of, oh, marriage is, you know, is a patriarchal kind of thing. No, it's not. It's, again, marriage is the relationship on the woman's terms. A married woman is a much stronger partner and participant in the relationship than a woman who is living with a guy. Ladies need to know that.
Oh, this is such important stuff. You know what else is so interesting from your book is that insurance companies even recognize cohabitation as risky behavior. So again, even though it's a given, it's a biblical, this is a biblical issue, but it is a scientific issue. Talk about that.
And that's exactly right. You know, insurance companies don't really care a lot about morality, right?
Yeah.
You know, we as an insurance company, we're going to encourage people to do the right thing. No, it's a just straight out dollars and cents thing that they're developing. And they know that for health insurance, for home insurance, for car insurance, couples that are cohabiting together are more likely to get in accidents. They're less likely to be responsible. They're less likely to be healthy. Married couples are significantly more likely to not get into accidents, to not be out in bars and things getting in fights. They're not as likely to get sick from any kind of illness. And when they do get sick, their recoveries are much faster because of the nature of the relationship. And so that's a very good point, is that, yes, insurance companies know plain well the very clear difference between cohabiting and married relationships.
And that's not a judgment call, because listening to you say those things are backed up by stats.
Absolutely.
And so
absolutely,
the proof is in the pudding.
And it's not just a few studies that indicate this. Mm. I mean, it's the overwhelming wealth of studies. In fact, it's the rare study that comes out that seems to indicate, oh, there's not much difference between marriage and cohabitation. Really, all of the studies indicate this big, significant difference. Now, the scholars don't really debate that. What they are debating is, why is that the case? What is it about marriage and what is it about cohabitation that makes them very different? And the things that they're really coming down to understanding and agreeing on is the commitment level. In cohabitation, there is not the commitment. In marriage, there is the commitment, and that makes tremendous difference.
And commitment requires something of you. And so we so often opt for the easy way, but the more difficult way, the way of dying to yourself, mm-hmm. is good for you. It's the way our Savior led, you know.
Yeah.
Another thing that was fascinating to me is that those who marry are happier than even if they had a higher income. And you think, when you stop for a minute to think about that, you think, if I had more money, I could relax, I could take vacations, get more massages. Mm-hmm. But truly, more than a higher income is marriage that makes you more
absolutely
happy.
And this is dramatic. And when I wrote this originally, I had to go back and check it because I thought it was crazy. But these scholars from England said that being married, the happiness level that improves is equal to having an extra $100,000 a year. That's what I had to go. It can't be $100,000. It has to be $10,000. No, it was $100,000. I mean, think about that. That is the benefit that marriage has. And what the scholar says is that happiness level was not replicated in the cohabiting relationship. So to say that cohabitation is similar to marriage is just absolutely false. There is more evidence for Bigfoot or Sasquatch than there is this false idea that marriage is similar to cohabitation. It just simply is not the case.
And though cohabitation makes it seem easier for the man, he actually lives longer in the context of marriage, right?
That's exactly right. That having that ball and chain, if you will, that wife who helps
him. I suddenly
feel
so attractive.
it helps him live longer. It helps him live healthier. Sexual satisfaction within married relationships is significantly higher. You don't find that same sort of benefit in cohabitation. In fact, sexual satisfaction in cohabiting relationships starts out high very early, but it declines very quickly. You don't see that in married relationships. In fact, you really can't find anything that cohabitation benefits women and men more than marriage on any real level.
And this is an obvious one, but I guess I don't know the stats. What about fidelity? What are the differences?
You know what? That's an interesting one, and there's a particularly interesting point that cohabiting men are significantly more likely to be unfaithful to their current partner than married men are to their partner. But here was the stunner. Cohabiting women were dramatically higher to be or more likely to be unfaithful to their partner than married women were. There's something about the cohabiting relationship that encourages women to be more promiscuous outside of the relationship. But you don't find that in married relationships. Married men and married women are pretty close in their fidelity and faithfulness to one another, and it's significantly higher within married relationships. It is skyrocketing in cohabiting relationships. So again, what I say is, ladies, if you want a guy who is not going to be faithful to you and you're not likely to be faithful to him, then cohabitation is exactly what you're looking for. If you don't want that, then marriage is what you're looking for.
Wow. You know, and this time went so fast. Our time's almost up, and we barely touched on the impact of the children. I mean, there's so much here to talk about, but maybe take a minute if you would. I would imagine that kids are affected academically, behaviorally, obviously safety-wise, but maybe say a word about the impact on kids.
Well, first of all, we're seeing increasing numbers of cohabiting homes with children in them. Used to it was not that many kids, but now nearly the majority of cohabiting homes have young children living in them. And even when it's their own mother and father cohabiting together, again, poverty, those children living in poverty, they're three times more likely to live in poverty if the mother and father are not married. They're less likely to do better in school. They're much less likely to be healthy, happy, have to visit doctors for mental and physical ailments. Physical abuse, mental abuse, verbal abuse is much higher to those children when living with mom and her live-in boyfriend. The comparisons are not even close. So when we think about, what does it matter if a couple is living together? You know what? The social costs of living together are dramatically higher, and the social costs to children are significantly higher.
You know, you think about the let's just say for the example, the man who's living with this mother, you know, this woman who's a mother, he has no reason to commit to those children,
Absolutely.
To be patient with those
children. He's picked her. He hasn't picked the children.
And those kids know it suddenly. They're in the way.
Absolutely.
Well, Glenn, I can't say enough about this book. I love what God's given you to do.
I think you're an important
voice in the kingdom of God, for sure. Would you just close the show today and pray for that person listening who's living with their significant other and hearing it, and their heart sort of beating right now, that they would have the courage to do the right thing?
Yep, you bet, Susie. God, we come before you, and your eyes and heart know the individual or individuals out there that are in a relational situation, Father, that you do not desire for them, and that they feel something in their heart that it's not right for them either. And Father, I pray that you would come and touch that individual, Father. Give them the strength, give them the comfort, give them the courage they need to be able to leave that relationship. And Father, I pray that you would bring others around them, others within the church, to say, you know what, if you want to move out of your boyfriend's house, your girlfriend's house, we will give you a place to stay so that they can do the right thing. Father, I pray that you would just be very, very real to that person struggling within the relationship that they're in right now, and that you would bring peace, that you would bring safety, that you would bring comfort to their life. Father, you are the Good Shepherd, the Father who loves us, who seeks us, who will not let us go. And we thank you so much for that.
us.
And we love you in Jesus' name.
Yes,
Lord. Amen.
Amen. Glenn, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Honor to have you. The title of the book, again, The Ring Makes All the Difference. I'm going to leave you with this passage, 1 Corinthians 13. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me. For now we see only reflection as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I'm fully known. And now these things remain, faith, hope, and love. And the greatest of these is love. Hope you're encouraged today. You've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson, and you can find a podcast of this show up on our website at faithradionet.com. Tune in tomorrow for the Saturday edition of Live the Promise. My guest will be Pastor Per Nilsson. We're going to talk about the sovereignty of God as we look at the book of Job from Scripture. If you or someone you know is walking through difficulty right now, you're not going to want to miss this show. Well, the Lord wants you to last long and finish strong, and He's the one who keeps you strong to the end. Have a blessed day.